Successful fundraisers tend to rely on two core elements, laughter and tears. If you make people chuckle or cackle, you'll have them reaching for wallets. If you make them cry, if you force them to cry, people will almost certainly give you money. It's not a good life lesson generally, but it tends to work for fundraisers. The very best fundraisers do both. They make you laugh and cry. They provide quite literal comic relief. That name was chosen for a reason, allowing you to understand the scope of the issues, feel sympathy for the people affected, but also leaving you with a sense of happiness and hope. So today we are going to talk about all things fundraisers. We will look at what makes them stand out in an age of social media, an age of saturation, with so many voices clawing for space. We will discuss how to make fundraisers pop, how to make them shine. And of course, we will talk about some of the fundraising ideas that most interest us. That will include the weird and the wacky, the quick and the quirky, the strange and the shambolic, the sacred and the profane, the beautiful and the damned. Too much? Probably. Anyway, without further ado, I'm Johan Mark Jones and welcome to the Charity Digital Podcast. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Laura Stanley, Content Lead, Lisa Chimette, Business Development Manager, and Stuart Barber, Client Account Specialist, to discuss all things fundraising. Just so you're aware, we're all working from home, so there may be background noise and my internet is behaving quite badly. Anyway, let's begin. So to start, Laura, let's start with you. What do you think makes a good virtual fundraiser?
Hello. I think virtual fundraising isn't that much different to normal fundraising in that I think you need to have a sense of community. That's a big part of it. And it just needs to be something that's a challenge as well. But also, I think the big difference with a virtual fundraiser is that if you're doing a challenge event or something like that, it needs to be able to fit in part of your everyday life because you're not necessarily carving out the time that you would be if you were doing an in-person fundraiser, I think. So if you're going to a gig, you know you've got a gig at 7 p.m. on a Friday, right? But if it's a virtual thing, it's more likely to be walk a mile a day or something. So it needs to be something that you can, that is achievable in that sort of respect, I think. But yeah, I think the main thing is if you're doing a fundraiser, some of the most fun parts are getting to know people or, you know, actually raising that money and seeing the reward come out of it. So I think you need to make sure that you've got that sense of community there. And that people are encouraging each other. And also that, yeah. And also in terms of that reward, make sure that donations are really easy. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Can I just add also to Laura's point that I think it's also very important that because it's virtual, it also needs to be very inclusive, even more so that a physical fundraiser. Because obviously physical fundraiser, if you do, raise, then obviously you have to be good at running. Maybe you can walk, but you have to be good at running. Whereas the virtual aspect of it means that anybody can take part and do their bit, depending on their ability, and can still contribute a lot to the cause.
I couldn't agree with both of you more, that sense of inclusion on a virtual fundraiser. I would disagree slightly that you might not give over the same amount of time or effort, energy as for a physical one. There are plenty of things out there like Gaming for Good and things like that, which are solely virtual fundraisers and have that sense of community using platforms such as Twitch and things like that.
That's very true, actually. Yeah, you make a good point. I've definitely thought about in terms of an event there and not, necessarily the...
Yeah, I think it's the type of fundraisers, like a fun run done virtually where all the runners are sort of doing to their own time or walking or something like that may lack that little bit of inclusion, that sense of teamwork and doing it together. But it's certainly not necessarily... The virtual aspect of it isn't necessarily a barrier to having that inclusion.
No. Mm-hmm. There's one charity I know was doing a virtual walk, I think, and they managed to link up fitness apps to the thing so everyone could see all the training and the running and things like that and keeping up to date. And so they also had the sense of competition, like, how much running have you done today? I think everyone likes seeing people's runs, right?
Yes, yeah, compare each other on the ranking.
I mean, I'm not a runner myself, but I know my friends are all obsessed with their Strava. Obsessed.
No, I'm more of a walker personally. So yeah,
I mean, I've seen in The Office how much everyone's obsessed with the walking. Challenge.
Give me a gamepad any day.
It does raise the interesting idea of like, what is it particularly about the fundraisers that we've sort of followed or the ones we've taken part in? Mm. So could we talk a little bit about the virtual fundraising ideas that you've either been part of or you've seen and you've kind of appreciated from afar even? And importantly, why those were successful or why they grabbed your attention? Go to Lisa to start, I think.
Yeah, brilliant. Yes. So basically, I'll just go a little bit off because so I'm part of a choir and we are going to take part in a fundraising gig in the new year for a very small charity to help a little girl called Bibi fight cancer. Anyway, the virtual part of that fundraising activity is something that this charity has done, which I think is called Action and Promises. And basically, this is really good, and I took part of it in it. You can either contribute by promising to create something, you know, walk your dog, bake a cake, you know, do a lesson, create something with your hand, do some kind of craft, and then other people can bid online and pledge to buy this thing. So you pledge to make it and they pledge to buy it. The guys at the charity, they had a target of £2,500, and they raised £4,500 just with that sort of virtual auction. That was very simple because it didn't necessarily involve outside businesses. I know we get back to it later on. So it could involve anybody that could have a good, they could put up for auction. And then it could also involve anyone who wanted to get a nice loaf of bread baked by somebody in the Birmingham area, for instance. And that was, not worldwide, but nationwide. And I quite like that because it also, like we said, created a sense of community, thinking like, okay, if somebody is doing something interesting in my area that I can bid for, then if I can maybe meet them, you know, it can also create some more relationship and expand your network. So I quite like that.
Mm.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys.
I love that. I love it when you get to be creative about what you can deliver as well. That's so fun. My friends put on a murder mystery once. It was a virtual one during lockdown. It was Strictly Come Dancing themed. And we all just donated a little bit of money to, went to it like that. It was very low, obviously it was quite like low scale fundraising, but it was really fun. And I just think there's just so many different options out there, especially because we were trying to get away from like the virtual quizzes that were going on at the time or, mm-hmm. you know, so many of those. Although we also did try and host a quiz for my friend who was raising money during the marathon.
Yeah.
But that was, I found that really difficult just to get our name out there really, because we were trying to do it. Because my friend was really struggling with raising money for the marathon. Mm. In the end, what worked for her really, really well was a raffle.
Right.
She contacted Dyson, I think, I think it was Dyson, and they had a special charity email address where she emailed and said, look, I'm running the marathon for this charity. Is there anything you can help? And they gave her a good prize that she could raffle off. Mm. It meant that she could add that to her her fundraising. It was, and that's what got her to hit her target, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it worked really well.
I think that's the point, isn't it? A lot of these things, if you have a pub quiz or anything, even to be honest, stuff like Christmas Jumper Day now, it raises a bit of money, but it's not going to attract as much attention because, yeah, it is saturated. I mean, every birthday, all my aunties and all my mum, my family, everyone does a small fundraiser where they're just raising money for a cause they care about. And they raise money, and that's important. But if you go through Facebook, sometimes there's 6-7 people, you know, raising money for different causes just by scrolling through. So I think it is about trying to attract attention in a different way. And sometimes those pub quizzes and the like, which we experienced a lot of during lockdown, got a bit lost in the noise, I think. Yeah. Stuart, virtual favourites.
My favourite of this year, actually I have to go all the way back to February, was a week of events called Game Blast. It's an annual event. It's been running for a few years in aid of an organisation called Special Effect, who help disabled gamers access controllers and keyboards and equipment that they can use. Mm-hmm. Now, rather than it be a centralised event, it is encouraging people to hold their own events. And that can be anything from the virtual pub quizzes, live streams of speed runs of games, Mario Kart tournaments, FIFA tournaments. Most of it is broadcast live through Twitch, which I'm going to mention again. Last year, they raised about £150,000.
Oh, wow. Big amounts.
And it's successful.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, it's the type of event that actually you don't need that much equipment for. Most people have access to a games console and a screen and an internet connection, and really easy to turn from a fully virtual event to a hybrid event in person, and with chat applications and things like that. Actually, everyone feels like they're in the same room and has that great sense of community.
Yeah. And it's a shared experience at the same time, and you immediately have something in common with people. So it's not awkward ever. You know, some of these these fun runs can be awkward. You know, we'll move on a little bit and start thinking more, because obviously with lockdowns coming to an end this year, but that probably isn't the case. But yeah, we'll move on to the physical, because we have seen the return of physical fundraising to a degree, but there's been a lot of cautiousness around it. Next year, with everything going well, if the Omicron isn't devastating, I guess, then maybe we will see the return of the physical fundraisers properly. And so I kind of want to talk about what makes a good physical fundraiser. So the first thing is, that what's the recipe for a good physical fundraiser? I'll go to Stuart Stock.
Recipe for a good physical fundraiser. One that is memorable, that is fun, it has that sense of inclusion, and that it's easy for people to donate to your cause. I think that's one of the biggest things. It's some of these fun runs and things like that you see in names of good causes. Mm-hmm. Unless you know someone that's actually taking part in that, it can be very difficult to donate to that particular cause. So there's lots of different ways that can be done, from physically having people with buckets accepting cash, having links and QR codes and things like that as well.
I think variety is key these days, isn't it? You have the bucket. Sometimes you see that, but then there's nothing digital and people don't have cash.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always the opposite to what you've got in your pocket.
Yeah. I mean, even if you, they have to have both, don't they? And I think that's it's a blind spot in a lot of charities, I think, where they kind of go, we've got the event, we've got things happening. And particularly for smaller charities, because they're always not as glued up because of resources and stuff. But you've got the event, you've got a really good idea. And then you actually, when it comes to converting into donors, that's the blind spot. Lisa, what do you think makes a good fundraiser? What's the recipe? I keep using that word for some reason.
Recipe? Well, I'm a foodie, so I'm very on par with recipes. I would really agree with Stu. I think is also adding to the mix is maybe a local one, because we know that it might be hard to travel or to go or to even cross the other side of London. So really, anything that is local to you, probably closer to your heart as well, because amongst you love your neighbours and love the area where you live, then you're probably more inclined to spend a bit more time at a physical fundraiser in your area, whether that's a fun walk or even a little Christmas market or flea market, anything. So to me, the key is, have it very simple for anybody to join, anybody to donate as well with the QR code. I think that's something very, very hopefully easy for charities to add to the traditional bucket. And make it also, fun in the sense that it's, you can have, you can link maybe your beneficiaries and then your supporters, maybe bring them together if your cause allows for that. I think that would be also, a good point, because that's an opportunity for people to meet and talk how they're connected to the charity or the cause.
Yeah. Laura?
Yeah, I completely agree. This is an uncontroversial podcast. Memorable.
Surprised. Yeah. I thought this would be full of anger.
I have no hot takes. Every charity digital take is a hot take, right? So that's how it is. So I would say that just make it easy to donate, for definite. My friend who was raising for the marathon, she's got so many shout outs on this podcast. She had to get her little QR codes to put on her cakes for bake sales, which I thought was so cute. And we're going to do it.
Wow.
Yeah, I just think it's clever, because I'm terrible for carrying cash nowadays. Yeah. It means I got a cake out of it. So why? Also, I think out of the box as well. I keep thinking about this. There's a comedy night local to me that is called Canned Laughter, and they ask people to buy tickets, and it's for in aid of the local food bank. But they also ask people to bring along tinned food on the night as well. And I just think it's a really really great idea. and it's just that little bit of, it feels quirky. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's why you're going to it. It's not just like you pay for the ticket, they go to the comedy. There's also the cause is at the forefront of your mind. And I think that's really good. I really like that.
But I think that's essential. I mean, someone gave one of our freelance writers wrote an article, and they mentioned the fact that the simple thing to do is put a QR code on the bucket.
Yeah.
So if you have someone shaking a bucket, a tin that they're useful, I don't know. For people with these cash, they sort of asking for, and if you go, sorry, I don't have any money, it's like, well, turn the bucket around.
Exactly.
Now what's your excuse? But I think, again, thinking outside the box is a massive one for that, because I honestly find it funny, because if you have for example, I think in one of our videos, we mentioned having a QR code the geography of Newcastle, if you were raised in Newcastle. And a little thing like that would make people go, I like that. And then they'll donate a couple of quid, because you've almost done something a bit unusual that it encourages and emphasizes people to engage, which is all you're really asking for, and it converts,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, also good for like brand recognition. You're a charity based in Newcastle,
Yeah.
I think that's so good.
Push that as well, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I love that.
Okay. Moving on a little bit to some of the fundraising ideas you liked, the physical ones. And again, would like encourage you to say what it was about that physical fundraising idea. And it doesn't have to be your own. It could be one you've seen or one you saw about online, but what made it successful and what you liked about it really.
Well, I could start.
Yeah,
and I could start again with my choir. I mean, we've done a few almost like impromptu gigs. I mean, they weren't really impromptu, but they were next to a tube station. And you cannot imagine the smile he puts on people's face at the end of the day, listening to some Christmas singing or just normal singing, normal songs. We were in partnership with a small local charity as well, I think we're planning to do that again this year. And it's just very simple. People don't need to stay for the full length of the set, but just in passing, they can touch their phone, donate, and enjoy the music. And I think that's one of the best thing I've ever got to do, fundraising wise with the choir, doing a bit of putting a bit of joy in people's face and minds. I don't know about the others. Because I've also got
the others don't sing, Lisa.
Yes, the others don't sing. When they should. I mean, the other one I'm thinking of is gym challenges. I'm an avid gym goer. And with the whole health challenges that we're going to probably see next month in January, there's a lot that charities can do, maybe with the local gyms, because people would be very happy to be part of not only a challenges that, you know, that will help them feel better, and, you know, be fitter, and also contribute to a great cause. So, I've seen a few examples. There was the Blue Light Active Challenge, which was a hybrid. So people could either meet in gyms or could do the, you know, challenge at home, and just enter with, you know, the likes of Strava and the other apps there, what they did, and raise money for a great cause. I think it was several emergency charities that pulled together to create that. But yeah, so some health related challenges, whether that's to do with Benganuri or anything, those are the ones that also work quite well.
Yeah, I think the competitive side of it as well is definitely true, isn't it? I mean, I will definitely raise more money if someone sets me a challenge, because on a personal level, I'll try and raise more money, but I'll also push myself to beat my friends. So yeah,
definitely 1,000 burpees by the end of next.
Well,
month.
Probably not that, but how much you donate? Stuart, we'll move to you.
I was going to say, thanks, Lisa. I'm definitely not a singer, and maybe I can get people to sponsor me to not sing.
I'll give you an idea.
My taste with things like this are sort of slightly more off the wall than things like the health challenges and things like that. I'm very much in for those events that include everyone and have a sense of community. So I really go in for things like the head shaves and the tattoo-a-thons and things like that. I just remember after the Manchester Arena bombing, a really big movement across Manchester and the whole country, with tattoo artists getting together, giving people bee tattoos as that mark of solidarity, whilst also raising money for the emergency funds to help the families that had been affected. And other things like that. I've seen events or recognition for MS charities with people having spoon tattoos, the mental health links to the semicolon tattoo that is more prevalent. I just think, for me, a good physical fundraiser really gives the people that are involved in that activity that sense of togetherness and working together.
Yeah, that's really true.
And whether that's doing something as silly as shaving your hair off, just as valid as baking a cake type situation. But they're the ones that really sort of stick in my mind and the forefront, the, oh, I wouldn't have thought you could do that as a charity event or a fundraising idea. I think we can be a little bit limited in our thinking on what we can do. And pretty much anything can be turned into either a virtual or physical event, depending on sort of the medium that it would take place in.
I completely agree. Can I just say, I think sometimes there's a temptation to think that something's a niche or like no one else is as interested in that as I am. But I was just thinking about one of my favorite physical fundraisers, which was Phantom versus Les Mis, and the cast used to do a five-a-side football match, and I was obsessed with it every year. And honestly, I don't think it wasn't a huge deal. They just played in a park, and they got like a couple of members of the cast to sing at the halftime show. I don't know if Les Mis really counts as niche, but at the same time, I don't think a lot of people know about that as a thing, and it was great. And I just think that everyone has their own little. I think everyone has their own passion, right? That's what I think. And so I agree with Stuart in that. Whether it's tattoo-a-thon or musical theatre.
So some of the others I've seen, you mentioned the football match there. There's an annual event run by the Royal Vauxhall tavern an LGBT plus sports day every year. The money raised goes towards charities that work with LGBT youth for greater inclusion in sport and things like that. So everything is there available. You just need the right idea and a way and a way to raise money.
Yeah. And I think the key, another key to that is thinking about, for charities listening, think about your mission and align the fundraiser. I mean, it seems like a simple point, but align the fundraiser with your mission. You know, don't think inside the box where you go, all right, we're a charity that does this, let's have a cake sale. Think about what you do and think about how that raising money can also raise awareness and tying the two together.
Yeah,
I think that's quite important. And finally, I would say as well, just to add, if that's okay, there's other ways of raising money other than the just simplistic act of donors. You can also appeal to your local community, appeal to sponsors and you know, I mean, whether that's corporate or just local communities, local businesses that can provide food or provide drink, or maybe they want to give you some money to sponsor the event to raise awareness for what they do. There's all these different ways of doing it. And I think a lot of people, when they enter the sort of fundraising mentality, is about what event do we show and how do we get the most amount of money there for the act? Whereas like there's a much broader spectrum of options where you can pick and raise money. So I think that's all really important stuff and just stuff to consider before. I'm just going to ask a final question, which is just to add, has anyone got anything to add in terms of the fundraisers, virtual or physical, things you've enjoyed that have been a bit quirky or a bit unusual? And it's fine if not, but if there's anything you just want to add or anything you want to add generally, because we've got a few minutes to sort of chat through some stuff.
Yeah, if I may. So in basically in France, we have something equivalent to Babysit Children in Need or a big telethon. Mm. So that's what they do once a year in beginning of December in France, and basically is to help rare disease and treatments. So it's a big charity, but loads of local people, about, you know, thousands and thousands of people get involved at their level, at the local level, to raise a little bit of money towards that. And this year there was a very quirky one, which involved people in a care home that just knitted, and the aim was to cover a whole bridge with a giant woolen scarf. And basically they started the task, but then with Facebook, they managed to just create a whole community of people who would send them knitted little units of wool that they could sew together, knit together, and put across the bridge. They raised thousands and thousands of euros. But I quite liked it because it was really crazy, a crazy idea to cover a bridge with a giant scarf. But it was so great to create a community around it, loads of different people who just enjoy knitting, who come from all walks of life. Obviously, for the care home, it was great because those were also people, all the people that were isolated. So it gave them also a great thing to work towards for the full year. And I quite liked it. And I thought that was quirky, cute, and also, you know, contributed to a good cause.
Amazing.
I've never heard of a fundraising yarn bombing before.
Well, I'll share the link. Obviously, it's all in French, but you can translate with Google.
Yeah, I think never underestimate how much people want to be a part of things. I think that's, I think, yeah, I would definitely, I can't knit, but I would learn for that. Like, that would be so much fun. It reminds me of all the appeals. There's been a few over Christmas about sending Christmas cards out to people who were isolated or feeling lonely.
And true,
I think, and people who are then inundated with cards because of, I think people do pick up the thing and think, no, if they will answer a call. I don't want to be dramatic, but they sort of do. I think people do want to be part of things like that. And I just think if you can give them that sense of community, make it as easy as possible for them to do, and show them that there's like an outcome there, if that makes sense. So like a bridge being covered in knitting, there's a visible thing there.
Yeah.
And it's for a good cause. And I think that's incredible. And that's really good.
Mm. I think my takeaway really is that, don't limit yourself by what others do and what you consider are the right things to do as fundraising events. It's, they can be as diverse as your imagination, as long as you can get a few people together that have got a common cause and goal and are willing to make a fool of themselves, run a marathon, shave their heads, get some tattoos together, then actually you're on the right tracks.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect place to end. Thank you so much, because I think the two takeaways I have are, yeah, like you said, be creative, don't limit yourself. And I love the idea, Laura, at the end there of don't underestimate how much people want to get involved. And I think that is something of an oversight for some people, and just make it as easy as possible. So yeah, that's a wrap really. Thanks to everyone at home for listening, and thanks to all our guests today for taking part.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you next time. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone.